is the Ghosts in the Valley podcast. I am your host, Al Cooley, and welcome. Today's episode is on The Exorcist, the true story with Roland Doe. If any story of demons or the devil possession bothers you, you might want to skip this one. If it does interest you, stay tuned for at the very end of this episode. I have a bonus, which is a true story given to me from a friend of mine in 1988, and it's called Jackie. But before we get into that, let me give a couple shout-outs. Number one is to Cindy Martinez from Welcome to the Neighborhood podcast. Her father is doing very well in Chicago, and my prayers and thoughts go out to him. I hope he gets better real soon, and she will be back with her podcast real soon. Also, thank you to Robert over at Ghostly Paranormal. He was on my last episode, and he gave me a shout-out on his podcast, and I appreciate that. You know, if we can help each other out, that's what it's all about. And sharing great stories. So let's get right to it with The Exorcist, the story of Roland Doe. The following is based off the true story of Roland Doe, The Exorcist. The movie came out over 40 years ago, but the true story began in 1948. And we're going to take you back to the very beginning and how the story became a novel written by William Peter Blatty. Now, the movie features a young girl, 12 years old, played by Linda Blair. But the actual story was Roland Doe, whose real name will never be released to the public. But it is a true story. And so they went from a boy to a girl, but the story is based on a little boy. You see, it began in 1948, when Roland was 13 years old. Born to a German-American Protestant family. Family friends described the family as normal, but that all changed in the summer of 1948. The boy said he saw an image of Jesus in his grandmother's room, which twisted and moved as if someone was hitting the wall behind it. At first, the family thought it was mice, and they called in pest control, but what happened next left them in no doubt this wasn't rodents. Roland's mattress moved violently in the middle of the night. There was a constant bashing coming from the basement, and a terrible smell that flooded everything, and ordinary objects were suspended in the air. You see, this began when Roland's aunt died, and he began to hear weird noises in the basement, scratching noises. A friend was in their house when the boy was sitting in a chair, and then suddenly, without any warning, he was thrown from it and landed multiple feet away. And this was the first time that someone outside the family had witnessed these weird incidents. Things started to go wrong at school. Roland's family moved him after teachers claimed his desk would move during class, as well as objects. He was seen as a troublemaker. A fellow student explained what happened. The desk was shaking and vibrating extremely fast. And I remember the teacher yelling at him and told him to stop. And I remember Roland yelling back at the teacher, saying, "I didn't do it." When Roland's mother walked in to find his bed shaking, they decided enough was enough. Now, the family were at their wits' end and was sure Roland was possessed by his dead aunt. They turned to a Lutheran pastor who, when he realized how bad things were, recommended they contact a Catholic priest. A local priest was sent, but Roland screamed at him in Latin. And since I can't read Latin, this is what he said in English.
"O priest of Christ, you know that I am the devil."
Disturbed and shaken by what he had just seen, the priest applied to the church to carry out an exorcism. Tests were held as the church requires mental and physical evaluations to be done before any exorcisms can take place. And this is for the safety of the person who is possessed, and it's also for the safety for the person doing the exorcism. Roland Doe was taken to Georgetown University Hospital, a Jesuit-run institution where he could be cared for. So one night in 1949, when Von Hall at St. Louis University was a resident for Jesuits, heard a diabolical laugh that froze his blood. That evening, the young Jesuit was saying his daily prayers as he sat in a small room directly across from the old rectory at the back of the St. Francis Xavier College Church. "I heard this wild, idiotic, diabolical laughter," said the Reverend Lucius F. Cervantes. "I hadn't heard a thing about the exorcism at the time, so I tried to find out what it was all about. I looked towards the window from where the light was coming, but saw nothing. What he had heard was a 14-year-old boy, many believe, was possessed by demons. These episodes occurred mostly at night. He would supposedly become incredibly strong, his body distorting and transforming, hills touching the back of his head, the body forming a loop, all reported by priests who were witnesses. During these convulsions, the doctors attending him could find no change in his pulse rate or blood pressure. The bed would shake violently. Obscene words and images appeared on his skin in raised red welts. These brandings on his body, on his skin, it happened as many as 30 times each day, were unquestionably paranormal," says William Peter Blatty, who wrote the novel The Exorcist. "Some of the markings were on the back. Some were pictures, often lasting from 3 to 4 hours. Blatty claims that to have a copy of the official document, the official report by the late Reverend William Bowdern, who conducted the exorcism, Blatty supposedly received after he wrote the book. Blatty and a Jesuit priest named John Walsh, a friend of Bowdern's, talked about the Roman numeral 10 that appeared on the boy's chest. It was believed that 10 demons were involved, Walsh said. A voice coming from the boy supposedly told an attending Jesuit who was assisting Bowdern that he would die in 10 years and would be burned in hell. Blatty recalled one of the strangest incidents in the official diary. One night, sitting on the bed beside the boy, Bowdern watched a tiny, nearly invisible pitchfork or lines move from under the boy's upper thigh all the way to the ankle. Droplets of blood occurred. Bowdern was only a foot away, and there were usually 4 or 5 witnesses. The boy supposedly spat a foul substance at the priest, all the priests who attended him, all the way across the room, and was incredibly accurate with his spatting of this substance. The pea soup vomit shown in the movie The Exorcist was not too far-fetched from the original story of what happened. Often, according to the priest, he had to be forcibly restrained. And in one of these incidents, he broke the nose of a Jesuit seminarian named Walter Halloran, who was at St. Louis University working on his master's degree in history. For 3 weeks, Halloran assisted Bowdern. Recently, he recalled his involvement in this strange case. Halloran used to drive the boy from the St. Louis home of his aunt and uncle, who were instrumental in bringing the boy here, to the college church rectory and the old 19th century wings of Alexian Brothers Hospital on South Broadway, where most of the exorcisms were conducted. Those wings of the hospital were torn down in 1976. "I was a good friend of Billy Bowdern," he said, "so Father Bowdern asked him to hold him down." Halloran is a former high school football player, but even being a football player, Roland Doe broke Halloran's nose. Now, Halloran said he observed words like hell that were raised on the boy's skin. That happened a number of times. It just appeared, and quite a bit of pain. "On Holy Thursday that year, phenomenon started occurring as I was reading the prayers.
Don't talk about it anymore. It hurts too much."
And there were more obscenities. but he was a nice little kid under all of this. It all tallied after I read the script by Father Beaudern, Jeanwald said. He is certain that many years later that the wails and the laughter that Cervantes heard were those of the boy possessed with the devil, or with something. Beaudern, who died a few years ago, never publicly acknowledged that he was the exorcist, but he was. Over the years, Beaudern and others kept the identity of the victim a secret. Those who are living are very upset that the story leaked to the Washington newspaper in 1949. That was the beginning of the Whisper campaign that surrounded this event. It should have been kept a secret, said William Van Rue, one of two Jesuits known to be alive who officially assisted in the exorcism. The whole chronicles were leaked to the Washington Post. The young man had to suffer so much, it caused severe pain and resentment because of confidentiality was violated. Beaudern would never talk about it, not even to his family members, said his nephew Ned Beaudern of St. Louis. I can't imagine a more totally fearless man than Billy Beaudern, Walsh said. You see, Blatty was a student at Georgetown University, a Jesuit school, from 1946 to 1950. A cold rain pelted the awning of Jesuit Hall. A good day for the devil. Walsh became an important link to this strange event because he was one of the few people still alive who read Beaudern's secret report, and he did not take an oath that would keep him from divulging any of the document's contents. Indeed, he kept all the grotesque, unbelievable, and fantastic things that reportedly happened to the boy during the 12 weeks of exorcism. And at the end of each day, Beaudern met with the witnesses and participants in the room. At times, there were as many as 6 to 7 Jesuits, not to mention the boy's family members and others who entered the room. Together, they would go over and over of what he had written and verify that this is exactly what happened, according to Blatty. I can assure you one thing, the case I was involved with was the real thing. Beaudern once wrote to Blatty, I have no doubt about it then, and I have no doubts about it now. But he would tell nothing beyond that. In some accounts, the exorcism took place here in 1949, was considered by the church officials to be the most significant reported and documented case in 300 years. However, Jesuits being Jesuits, there were many skeptics among members of the Society of Jesus about just what tormented the boy. There are those who doubt that he was even demonically possessed. A prominent Jesuit psychologist of Georgetown, Juan B. Cortez, suggested that calling the devil produces a manifestation of the victim's ideas of him. The boy began acting as a possessed person is supposed to act. There are reports that a Washington University psychiatrist was called in to see the things that were happening. The name I had was Professor Bubb. The university has no record of such a person, who reportedly said he witnessed a hospital bedside table levitate slowly to the ceiling, Blatty said. Van Rue, who was there, is guarded about whether he believes this was a case of demonic possession. I'd rather not comment myself on that, he said. Walter Halloran expressed similar sentiments when interviewed by Jennifer Baker of Ladue, a student of Georgetown University, who wrote an article for the school paper, The Voice. I wouldn't be able to say whether it was valid or not. I've withheld judgment. I'm not saying Father Beaudern's wrong. I was just more comfortable not coming to a decision. A lot of incidents are explainable by reasons of psychomatic illness, but I don't know if the reasons can explain everything when taken together. Van Rue, who spent 38 years in Rome teaching and writing, he was caught up in the exorcism because he was assigned to St. Francis Xavier Church in 1949 as part of his tenureship. Billy Beaudern grabbed Bill Van Rue by the arm and said, I've got just the project for you. John Walsh said. Bodern definitely believed it was a demonic possession. I'm not too sure about Van Rue. I went into the thing without any previous knowledge, Van Rue said, and this thing was draining me at nights. After it was over, I never made that one of my interest, but what I do know about exorcism is almost everything. I would sit at his bedside and watch his eyes. I didn't get involved immediately, but they soon needed help with the boy. It was all unpredictable. I can't recall a pattern. I didn't read Blatty's book. I didn't want to. I personally felt that the movie was utterly disgusting and quite damaging because the effect it might have on the emotionally disturbed people. After his book and before the movie, Blatty said he came in possession of the secret exorcism diary. I, in fact, did not base my book on either of the publicized North American cases, said Blatty, referring to both the St. Louis event and a 1929 exorcism involving a woman, which reportedly occurred in Erling, Iowa. The 1949 case inspired me, Blatty said, from his home in Connecticut. It was notoriously publicized in the Washington area. I believe this one was the real thing. The three-month exorcism that took place in St. Louis gave me the conviction to go on, he continued. Had I not heard from Bodern, I don't think I would have written a book. In deference of Bodern's concerns, he changed the possessed character and the exorcist from a boy named Jamie to a 12-year-old girl. From his wallet, Walsh pulled out a small newspaper clipping. It contained questions about the devil from diverse sources. Mark Twain, an English priest, and a Bible translator named Ronald Knox, who died in 1957. It is so stupid of modern civilization to have given up believing in the devil when he is the only explanation behind it, Knox wrote. And Twain, in usual droll fashion, had this to say about the case of Lucifer. Satan hasn't a single salary worker, but the opposition employs millions, Walsh said. According to Walsh, the boy who was the object of the exorcism is now married and living in Omaha and has been fine since the exorcism. He named his first child Michael for the archangel, the scourge of demons, he wrote. He works for an airline. However, Halloran said he was under the impression that the boy became a doctor. There are other reports that the man changed his name and is still living in the Washington area. Walsh said the man reportedly recalls nothing or little about his ordeal, whether he works for an airline, whether he's a doctor, or whether he knows anything about what happened, which I tend to think is totally absurd. I mean, how could you not remember being possessed by the devil? But according to these reports, he's converted to being a Catholic, as did his entire family, said the grandmother who first reported her grandson's odd behavior, but the grandmother remained a Lutheran until she died. I will say this, whether he was a Protestant, a Lutheran, or a Catholic, the demon doesn't care what you are. To conclude on this story, if Roland is still alive today, he would be around 86 years old. But since we don't really know his real name, we're going to go with Roland. Coming up on the next short story, and it was given to me by a friend of mine, Gregory, in 1988. The story is about a young African-American girl. She's 9 years old from the south side of Youngstown, and she goes by the name of Jackie, which is not her real name, but we're gonna give her the name of Jackie today. And Jackie had a bunch of mental problems. She was a troubled child in school. She was taken out of the Youngstown school district because she was a threat to not only herself, but to the other students. She was homeschooled for about 2 years, and it just got worse and worse. And they were contemplating on putting Jackie into a mental facility. And right before that happened, though, they brought in an expert to evaluate her to see if she qualified for this facility. And towards the end of the examination of Jackie, her body levitated about 2 to 3 feet off the bed. and turned sideways, still off the bed, and looking at the examiner, and told the examiner, "You will rot in hell with me." The examiner immediately fled the room in tears. Meanwhile, all along, Jackie's sister, her older sister, always claimed Jackie was possessed. It wasn't a mental problem. It was demons. And the parents, nobody would believe her, saying, you know, because it was a lot of similarities to the movie The Exorcist. A lot of similarities. Now, she didn't levitate to the ceiling or walk across the ceiling, but she did levitate, they say, 2 to 3 feet off of her bed. The family decided to bring in their reverend from their church, which was mainly an all-black church. And the reverend came in, and after talking to Jackie, and then watching how Jackie turned from a nice 11-year-old into a very troubled person that's possessed. Now she's 11. And he decided they would do an exorcism. So he called in 4 other members of his church, the elders. And this is where my friend comes in, because he was one of the elders of the church. And as the reverend put it, we're going to do an all-nighter until we get this thing out of her. Well, the all-nighter turned into 1-nighter, 2-nighter, 3-nighter, 4-nighter. And on that 4th night, they decided, we need more help. So they reached out to a friend of theirs that recommended a Catholic priest. Now, if anybody knows about the Catholic Church, they will not do an exorcism unless all other avenues are closed, as in a physical and mental evaluation, which has already been done. The priest came in on the 5th night, the 6th night. They were basically getting nowhere. It was a 6th night when the priest said, "I need all 5 members, the elders and yourself, talking to the reverend, plus I'm going to bring in my people," which were laymen and other ministers of the Catholic Church. "We are going to get rid of this tonight." There was a total of 13 people in the room. All ministers or elders of the church, the reverend and the priest, 13. For some reason, he needed that number 13. Nobody knows why. The next 12 hours, he was relentless. They were all relentless in saying the prayer to release the demon from Jackie's body, shouting the prayer, shouting it over and over. Jackie was fighting it all the way. As soon as her body would start to levitate, he would push her body back down on the bed, in her face, shouting the prayer. Her body would levitate again, pushed her back down. She spat on the priest. She threw up on the priest. She scratched the priest. He would not let up. Everybody was surrounded the bed now. Everybody shouting this prayer. After 12 hours, 7 days, and this was 24/7. It was nonstop. 7 days. The girl's body, her face, stopped being so tensed. Her body got relaxed. She started looking like the 11-year-old that her mother expected her to look like. The little girl started crying. Every grown man in that room wept, for the power of God got that evil spirit out of Jackie. Now, this was told to me by the one gentleman that was in the room. I was going to put it on my documentary that I released in 1998, and that for some reason, at the last minute, I decided not to put it on there. And I wish I would have, after the release of The Exorcist, and I thought that I would be playing off that movie. But anyway, I didn't do it. So some 33 years later, I'm telling the story that was told to me. And as the priest put it to the family, the devil doesn't care what color you are, what religion you are. You can call the devil a lot of different names in a lot of different denominations. The devil doesn't care the color, the gender, the age. Doesn't care. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Ghosts in the Valley.